We are going to continue today with part two of our series for the summer, our summer series called King David. My name's Pastor Nick. I just want to say a really warm welcome to you. I've realized there are a few guests in today. We had our Elim ordination yesterday, which was ordaining a number of ministers into ministry. So they, instead of being called Mr. or Miss or Mrs., they are now called Reverend. So there's quite a few of you in here today from that ceremony yesterday. So I just want to say a really warm welcome to you guys if you've joined us. And also just a warm welcome to you if you're new here today. Should we just give a warm welcome to all of our new guests? Really nice to have you with us. Thank you. So last week, we looked at David and Goliath in a message called Fame and Fortune. And if you didn't happen to see that or catch that one, then you can catch that one on our YouTube channel. If you need to follow along in the message notes today, I'd really recommend you do so because I've packed in quite a bit of teaching. There are a number of points here, and if you point your phone to that QR code, it'll take you to the YouVersion app, and you can follow through all the points that we've got today. There's a few of them. I'm going to go at quite a pace. I'm going to pack in some teaching. I know it's hot, but I think it's a good quality message for you to really help you, and we'll go along. So I'd like to open my message today with a picture and a story about a feud between two neighbors. I just want to show you this picture here. I'll walk back to here. So these are two neighbors here, and this is supposed to be a tree on the drive between these two neighbors, okay? So it is rather a ridiculous picture because it's half a tree, isn't it? And it stands between two neighbors, the Lee family and the Mystery family, not as in mystery that you don't know about. It just happens to be their surname. They lived alongside one another happily in the city of Sheffield here in the UK for around 20 years up until the pandemic. Now, when the pandemic came along, however, the Lee family, and the Lee family are on this side, they started getting annoyed with this tree. It's planted on the Mystery's side, but it's got overhanging the driveway on the Lee family side, isn't it? You can see that. Now, the Lee family had never been annoyed about this tree before, but during the pandemic, they started to get annoyed with it. That began to change. Everyone stuck at home during the pandemic. Our perspectives on a whole lot of stuff changed, didn't it? And I think we maybe possibly got a little more annoyed by more trivial things than we might normally do, but there we go. So the Lee family claimed that all the birds nesting on that side of the tree were pooping on their car and also making a lot of noise. Now, the Mystery family this side offered to put some bird netting around the offending half of the tree, but the Lee family were having none of it. And so one day, when the Mystery family were out, the Lee family simply cut their half of the tree off with a chainsaw. And it left the Mystery family with just half a tree on one side. And that picture that you can see there is the crazy result of their disagreement, which is both laughable but also a little bit sad at the same time, isn't it? I don't know if you've ever fallen out with someone and then had to navigate some conflict. Sometimes conflicts can go way beyond the laughable, can't they? They can start off trivial, start off kind of even funny, but then they can end up being really dangerous. Really, really awkward. And so today's message is called Feuds and Fighting, and we are taking a look at a long-running dispute that comes between David and Saul. The relationship between David and Saul got very complicated and very awkward because Saul, in essence, started to envy David. David, however, demonstrates some very exemplary behaviors in the way that he conducts himself during their difficulties. There's a bit in the Bible where it says, as far as it is possible for you to live at peace with your neighbor. Do you remember that? Keith reminded me of that in the first service. It's a great point. David demonstrates that to the nth degree in this particular scenario. In fact, I say to us all today that 1 Samuel 24 is like a toolkit for handling difficult people, as we will unpick in just a moment. Now, the David and Saul dynamic starts to go wrong quite soon into their relationship. To understand how we managed to end up with what we heard in our reading just there from Robson just a minute ago in 1 Samuel 24, we need to rewind a moment into our Bibles back to 1 Samuel 18, verse 6 through to 8. Let me just read that to you. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, that's after his battle with Goliath, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with timbrels and lyres. And as they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands." Now Saul was very angry. This refrain displeased him greatly. "They have credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. So after slaying Goliath, David wins the favor of the people. He wins the favor of the military. And he also wins exemption for his dad, Jesse, from taxation because of his victory over Goliath. Remember that? You know, they offer, okay, whoever beats Goliath can be, their parents can be exempt from tax and they can win my daughter in marriage and all this. David also wins Saul's own brother, Jonathan, as his closest friend, and that promise of the marriage comes good. Saul's daughter, Michal, is allocated to David in marriage. And when Paul hears this singing in the streets, I think it plays really deeply into his insecurities. Now, an insecure person is going to be much more likely to receive and to hear that David really is 10 times more accomplished in battle than Saul, you know, if you're Saul. And that's why it's so important that we get our security from our relationship with God and not our status with other people. You know, a secure person is genuinely delighted in the godly victory of another person. Let me just restate that. It's really important we receive that as church. A secure person is genuinely delighted in the godly victory of another person. Now, an insecure person, what they'll do is they'll try to obtain self-esteem from things that can't build self-esteem properly. So that's things like status, money, circumstances, fame, comparisons, just to list off a few things there. And if it is through constant comparison to other people, that can lead in turn to a really dreadful envy, terrible envy. And this is what we see happen to Saul. Now, we know that Saul's relationship with God has kind of gone off the rails a lot. And so the source of his self-esteem is swapping away from God and onto things that can't build self-esteem. If you're trying to get your self-esteem from other things and not God, ultimately that is going to go a little wrong. And so the setting of 1 Samuel 24 is that David and a band of discontents who are with him, they're all traveling around trying to hide from Saul and his men, because Saul and his men are pursuing David to try and kill him. Saul's envy has grown way past the pettiness of neighbors arguing over a tree. And it has pushed Saul, well, frankly, it's pushed Saul into a murderous jealousy that is attempting to find and kill David. So there are a few lessons that we can learn from this kind of rather bizarre encounter between David and Saul in 1 Samuel 24. And I think this Bible chapter and the encounters between David and Saul can really, really speak to us ever so helpfully in the area of how we handle those difficult people that we've, you know, those people we find really hard to navigate in life. Anyone here had a difficult person they've had to navigate in their life? Come on, you can be honest. Yeah, just one person. Okay, there's a few more of you. Yeah, we've had a few difficult people in our lives, haven't we, to navigate. And what I've done is I've broken up 1 Samuel 24 into a number of brief points. Now, don't sigh inwardly and think, oh no, 10 points. There are 10 points, bear with me, but I'm going to go at quite a pace through them, and I want you to just take a few notes and pay attention. Each of these is super helpful, but I'll be very brief. And as I say, you could use the QR code to jump into the YouVersion and follow it there as well. Number one, let's treat our difficult people just as we would want to be treated. Let's treat our difficult people just as we would want to be treated. Occasionally, we may just get presented with an opportunity to take advantage of our difficult person's vulnerability. Saul is relieving himself in a cave. And the Hebrew word here actually means to cover the feet. which is another way of saying going to the loo. And I don't want to be too kind of graphic here, but if it were just a wee, you'd nip behind a rock, wouldn't you? No need for a cave. Can I just put it to you? So I'm thinking it's probably a number two. Okay, should we just put it out there? Now, the temptation for David to kill Saul just then in his very vulnerable state must be very high, or must have been very high, but he avoids it. He does avoid it. And it's critical in our love towards our enemies that we must exercise our use of power appropriately if we suddenly find ourselves handed with some power, or handed some power. We need to actively shield the other person's vulnerability at all times, as we would hope others would shield ours, however much we're tempted to expose them and exploit that. So when the other person perceives we have done this, it can help to create a new dynamic in the relationship, even if that dynamic doesn't last too long. And actually, we know in the story of Saul that it doesn't last that long, and it doesn't. And there's another opportunity later, and Saul doesn't quite get it, and you'll understand how this all unfolds as we go through the series. Number two, let's listen to advice but take responsibility for our own decisions. We need to have the confidence to come to our own decisions about what's right in the circumstances. You know, David hears the promptings and the grumblings of his men, doesn't he? But then he makes up his own mind about what's right. And notice that David's decision goes against the counsel that he receives as well. We need to do that with our difficult people too. There will be no end of advisors, some of whom will tempt us to be more heavy-handed than we should be. But we must resist that temptation. Ultimately, we still need to arrive at our own decisions, no matter what our group dynamic might be. We don't always have to carry out someone else's plans for that awkward relationship they are watching us struggle with. It's very easy to give advice when we're not the one then having to live with that difficult person afterwards. When we're in the thick of things, we have to navigate it and make some decisions that we are okay with. And David knew that he would have to live with those consequences, so he ultimately came to his own decision. In other words, what I'm saying is, do not be swayed by the group. Make your own decision. Number three, let's only do things we will always be able to live with. Let's only do things we will always be able to live with. Be very careful about what we decide is okay to do to or to take from this other person that we find hard to love. So notice how David sneaks up and snips off a little bit of the robe, but then he agonizes in his conscience over whether he should have done that, doesn't he? And let's be real here, a lot of people would have grabbed the sword and just run Saul through with it, wouldn't they? And so David's self-restraint is pretty amazing. Now, I think what happened was that as he crept forward in the cave, he was initially in a place in his mind where he really wanted to kind of let the I could side out of himself much more than the I ought not to side out. And that's like a balance that a lot of us as Christians have, don't we? We have the, well, I could, and then we have the, well, I probably ought not to. And I think the Christian life is often a wrestling match between those two things. I'm not wrong, am I? So just as he got to the point where he really could kill Saul, the I ought not to part took the upper hand, and that's a good thing. Self-control in the moment is key. Otherwise, the consequences of overstepping the mark might just run away with us. David, listen to the impact of what great things David set up for himself in the future. David could have ended up teaching all his men that it is right to sneak up on a king in a vulnerable state and assassinate him. That's what he was presented with an opportunity to model to all those soldiers, isn't it? If you think about it. And then David himself would have lived with the fear of the same thing happening to him for the rest of his life. Because after all, he's modeled it to those soldiers. Those soldiers would say, well, you did it to Saul, so guess what? I'm going to do it to you. Also imagine how hard it would be for David to talk about what he did to Saul, who was his father-in-law, to his own children later on in life. Imagine this outworking. Yeah, Granddad and I fell out, and so I killed him with a sword while he was on the toilet. That's an awkward conversation to have with the grandchildren of their grandparent, isn't it? a very, very awkward conversation. That does not put you in a good light. The means by which we use to accomplish something are just as, or sometimes even more important, as the ends that we are seeking. Let's not do things on our journey to realizing a certain ambition that we will later regret. And let's not ever do something to someone else that we can't indefinitely live with. C.S. Lewis, the Christian author, wrote this once. Each sinful act leaves a mark on that tiny central self, which no one sees in this life, but which each of us will have to endure or enjoy forever. One man may be so placed that his anger sheds the blood of thousands, and another so placed that however angry he gets, he will only be laughed at. But the little mark on the soul may be much the same in both. So even with the forgiveness of God, and even with taking our thought life captive to Jesus, we can't erase our memory. So let's make all our memories ones that we can live with indefinitely. Does that sound reasonable? It does, doesn't it? Number four, let's remember our difficult person has their own relationship with God. We need to maintain at all times a strong awareness of the role of God, not just in our own life, but in the other person's life as well. David was strongly conscious all the time that Saul was the Lord's anointed, and rightly so. Just think how harmonious life could become if we were all like David in this attitude, in these situations. Well, hold on. Okay, yes, I have fallen out with you, but I can see God's got a plan for your life, and I'm just going to back off here, and I'm going to allow that plan to work itself out, and in fact, I'm going to try and help that plan come about. David was aware of God's plan, not just for himself, but for the other person as well. What we need to do is consign the outcome of conflict to God's care and to God's much bigger picture, which has the other person in view. Remember that the other person we might be struggling with also has a calling and a destiny and an appointment in God, haven't they? And remembering that, it makes it much easier to resist the temptation to appoint ourselves as the instrument of God's revenge. We sometimes have these fantasies, don't we, where we think, God, let me just at this person. Yeah, I can be the guy that punches. I can be the guy that takes that. I can be the... No. Don't go there. Don't do that. Number five, let's line up all our ducks in a row. What do I mean by this odd British phrase? It means getting all the people and the things for which we have responsibility properly aligned around us and our cause and our standards. So David rebukes his men, and he doesn't allow them to attack Saul. That's getting your ducks in a row. This means that for the people, we've got to take responsibility for some people. It means we've got to get around some of our friends. We must make sure that some of those people that are like loose cannons in our friendship network, they mustn't be allowed to be loose cannons. You know, a loose cannon is someone who fires off an attack on our behalf way too quickly. But we kind of don't mind because they've done it for us. We can step back. You know, we get that same wish fulfillment for vengeance from this, but it's even nicer because someone else has done it on our behalf and carried out our will, and we're all innocent. You know, we were just chatting by the coffee machine, and then they went and did that thing on my... Well, you know, what can I say? They did that. That's not getting all your ducks in a row, is it? That really isn't. We have all been the victim of someone who made sure that whilst they themselves appeared to be beyond reproach, they still managed to get in there with an offense against us via someone else who was on their side. David acts with integrity all the way through, and he does not allow his men to do that. He does not allow them to attack Saul. And not only does he control himself, he controls those loyal to him so that they don't let fly either or give in to their temptations. And that says a lot about David's leadership, doesn't it? It really does. Now, practically speaking, for you and I today, that means that if we want to spend the afternoon sounding off about our awkward person in some very sympathetic company, we need to make sure that that sympathetic company doesn't run with that on our behalf and become the executor of vengeance upon our behalf. And I got to say, I think the easiest and the best way to manage that is not to sound off in the first place. Or maybe sound off to God. Go and tell God about your awkward person. And can I just, in a friendly way, remind you that there's an entire book in the Bible of somebody sounding off to God about their awkward person, and it's the Psalms. Get into the Psalms because there's a lot of complaints taken by the psalmists to God about their difficult people, which means that vengeance is not carried out by those people directly upon those people. Number six, let's be mindful of our body language. Let's seek some ways to communicate respectfully. I noticed that when David comes out of the cave, he falls to the ground before Saul. Now, that in our culture in 2023 in Birmingham is kind of going to be weird, isn't it, if you do that? So don't do that. But it really is appropriate to watch how our body language is lined up with what we say. You know, so we need to show deference and respect through our body language and attitude. You know, words are not going to do the trick if our body language is patently hostile. You know, if you stand there going, oh, sorry, like that. You know, like it all comes out wrong, doesn't it? You don't mean sorry. You're leaking disappointment and annoyance with that person. In fact, there's actually no use coming out with the right language if you're giving body language away that completely counteracts that. And David's really good at this. He makes it completely clear by bowing down low. Listen, I mean you respect. I really mean it. So let's watch our body language closely and ensure its politeness completely matches our language. Number seven, let's speak up at the right time. Let's speak up at the right time. There comes a time in our awkward relationships when it's really right and proper to tell our side of the story. We need to tell the truth about how things have been for us. And we might need to facilitate that a little bit through an act of magnanimity, an act of holding out the olive branch, an act of saying, hey, I mean you well, even if it feels a little staged. David comes out of the cave and he explains how he sees things to Saul, at the same time as making Saul aware that he has acted very well towards him. And he uses the piece of cloth as the evidence of good treatment, doesn't he? I mean, he's got that piece of cloth, he's snipped it off, he's got it in his hand, and he treats it a bit like a kind of a white flag and says, hey, listen, I could have done something to you, but look, here, I didn't. I think that's really good practice. Make it crystal clear that you mean really, really well. And have the conversation. Say the words. And this is a key part that so many people don't know how to do because they can't summon up the courage. It's really hard to arrange to meet someone to tell them that they hurt us. But that might be a more healthy thing to do. Unless we tell them, we could end up living with them hurting us for the rest of our lives, or perhaps in some bitterness with some unsaid resentments or some unforgiveness. Pray for permission and opportunity and timing, and then when just the right time presents itself, let's say what we need to say, as David does, respectfully, with candor, but also with kindness. I want to recommend a book to you called Crucial Conversations. Crucial conversations are when the stakes are high, the opinions differ, and the feelings are strong. So like when you go in to ask for your boss for a pay rise and your boss says, absolutely not. Your opinions differ, and also the feelings are going to run strong because you wanted a mortgage off of your pay rise. And so that's what a crucial conversation is. Can I just tell you the hallmark of a crucial conversation is usually there's a little bit of adrenaline somewhere. And you're starting to think, oh man, okay, this is a real hair-raising conversation. How do I navigate that? Well, there's a whole lot of science about how you navigate that, and there's a whole lot of help about how you can navigate that in this great book. I think it's kind of got a sort of red and white cover. You can get on Amazon for about 11 quid, 12 quid. Really, really great book. Highly recommended to help you navigate some of those hard conversations, although David seems to be doing a great job just without the book. Notice also, just want to point this out to you, that David also asks in what he says that whatever happens would be between the Lord and them both. He couches it in the framework of this is being watched by God. He brings God into it, just like we saw in last week's message where he made the battle God's. He didn't just kind of try and do it on his own. So my urgent sort of request to us all is let's keep our conversations and our battles godly. And it applies here. Number eight. Let's accept that our difficult people are just unaware. People who are awkward often seem spectacularly unaware of how they can be to us, don't they? Saul is really not the most aware guy, is he? Just trace this through with me. He comes into a cave for a number two, and he seems to be blissfully unaware that there's a cohort of men in there looking to assassinate him. Can I just say that's lack of awareness? Okay. Now, he is so unaware that one of them manages to sneak up and snip off a little bit at the corner of his robe while he's doing his business. You know, whenever I pop into a cave, I always make sure there are no soldiers present. Can I just make that recommendation to you? Or a bear, or anything like that. Just make sure the cave is empty, and then you'll preserve your dignity, won't you? I want you to notice something, that after David's excellent speech and this heartfelt appeal, Saul just says, "Is that your voice, David?" Has that ever occurred to you as a little bit bizarre, that this is the person he's been chasing and has been in his court and has played the lyre for him and has won these battles? Would you not know this person's voice? Yes, Saul, it actually is my voice. And I've just practiced the most unbelievable self-control around not killing you. And the best you can first come out with is that my voice? I mean, for goodness sake, the guy is so, so unaware. And we feel that way sometimes about our difficult people. Thank you, Simon. One of the main ways our difficult people can be difficult is that we can feel totally and utterly overlooked by them. As though they don't recognize us or remember us or recall us, and yet we still have a need to treat them well still in the Lord. This is why our awkward people are difficult. This is why we find them taxing, because they're not on that chemistry connection with us. Number 9, let's not forget that being patient might bring very helpful insights. You know, once in a while, we might just be rewarded with an unexpected insight into another person's vulnerability. Notice how Saul asks David to take an oath not to harm his descendants. Clearly, whatever is going to happen to Saul's family really matters to him in the future. These moments help us understand the awkward people in our lives a bit better. You know, when they open up and we see their vulnerabilities, we understand the terms on kind of which they're coming from and what it is that makes them tick. And understanding is often a key to helping us love our difficult people just a little bit better. You know, if you know someone's drivers or someone's pressure points or their hopes or their fears, it all really helps. It's the stuff that they never usually let us see, but when they do, everything suddenly somehow makes sense, and the relationship has kind of been reestablished a little bit. In fact, I'd go so far as to suggest that some of the difficult people in our lives can become some of our closest friends when we apply a little understanding to where they're coming from. And if they perceive our care in making that effort towards them, it can really break down some barriers and build some bridges. Now, there is also always the gamble that this effort towards them may not pay off, and they'll just carry right on being really, really infuriating. But then, they might not, so it's worth it. Number 10, and last of all, ultimately, revenge must always be left to God. Ultimately, revenge must always be left to God. And this is hard. We want to be the executor of the revenge ourselves, don't we? We want to be the guy that gets in there and smites that person with the vengeance of the Lord. One of the most difficult reactions that we can take ourselves with our awkward and difficult people is to say, "No, God, you handle it. You handle it." That we let God handle it for us. Oh boy, that's a rare and pure form of faith to do that. It's really, really hard. David says this, "May the Lord judge between you and me, and may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you." Do not give in to the temptation to become God's chosen instrument of revenge upon your difficult person. I'm going to ask the worship team just to come back. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, team. It's worth saying, just as we close, that David gets a pretty much parallel repeat opportunity to show Saul that he could have killed him, but didn't. This is later on in the journey of this story. David steals into Saul's camp while they're all asleep, and he takes Saul's water jug and his spear away to prove that he got right up close to Saul and could have killed him, but he didn't. And David's use of the spear really models self-restraint, and it's in total contrast to Saul, because those of you who will know the story, Saul took the opportunity to throw a spear at David and his own son Jonathan on numerous occasions. So Saul is given a lot of opportunity to reflect on why David was treating him so well and the way that he did, and to think to himself about why David was being so measured with him. You know, if somebody was that measured with me and I was in a real battle with that person, that would really want me to, make me want to stop and think, what am I doing that this person's being so measured and fair with me for? Now, unfortunately, in Saul's story, we know that it doesn't work, except that it's not David that brings about his bloodshed at all. It isn't. Romans 12:19 tells us this about revenge. Friends, do not avenge yourselves. Instead, leave room for God's wrath, because it is written, vengeance belongs to me. I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. If he's having a poo in a cave, don't kill him. Sorry, that's not in Romans. Can I just say that? For in so doing, you will be heaping fiery coals on his head. Do not be conquered by evil, but conquer evil with good. David always treated Saul with deep integrity, and it's one of the main reasons that David was such an outstanding man and such an outstanding leader. Let's all stand. And I'm just going to quickly recap. I know that I've gone fast today, and I know it's hot. Thank you for bearing with, and thank you for paying attention so well. I'm just going to read out these 10 things real quick. And if there's something where you're in a difficult situation with a person, a conflict of some kind, and this resonates with you, then I want you to feel free to just come down the front while we're worshiping and to spend a moment or two with the Lord just by the altar here. Number one, let's treat our difficult people just as we would want to be treated. Number two, let's listen to advice, but let's also take responsibility for our own actions. That's so important. We can't just go with the crowd. Number three, let's only do things we will always be able to live with. Number four, let's remember our difficult person has their own relationship with God. Number five, let's line up our ducks in a row. That means getting our social circles and our friendship networks not to carry out vengeance on our behalf. Number six, let's be mindful of our body language. Let's not leak emotions through bad body language. Number seven, let's speak up at the right time. Number eight, let's accept that our difficult people can sometimes just be mega unaware. Number nine, let's not forget that being patient might bring some very, very helpful insights into the situation. And number 10, and this is the most important one of all, and if you want to carry one point away, ultimately, revenge must be left to the Lord. The Lord sees the whole picture. The Lord has their destiny in mind. The Lord is fair and gracious and kind, probably way more than we are. Let God do it. Let God handle it. And he will in his own time. So if any of those things appeal to you or you want to mull them over with the Lord, then feel free, either in where you are in your seats or come down to the front and speak to God about it. And our team's going to lead us in worship. Thanks, Kevin.